have definitely done that. There we go. So, Amanda, you just had a meeting. We're here in Bristol, but that's not where you went to Greenham, is it? That's not where you started out. What took you to Greenham, and what were you doing at the time?
I was 18, and I was doing A levels, and I was doing A level modern history, and it was all about war. And I was like, I don't want to bloody know about war. And then it was not the right A-level for me.
No.
And a squat opened in Sheffield. It was in the old Masonic Hall. And it was called the Peace Centre.
How perfect.
And it was just full of peace-loving, political, anarchist, hippie-punk type people.
Wow.
It was 1982, I would guess, 1982.
Yeah.
And I was far more attracted to that than I was to finishing my A-levels. So I sort of ditched my A-levels and started hanging out at the Peace Centre and met lots of other people. There were coaches going to Greenham Common. There were people there that were involved in animal liberation, Stop the City activities. And it was a sort of an anarchist hub.
Yeah.
And that's where I got really involved in a lot of political activities in relation to animal liberation and to going to Greenham and to Lake and Heath and to the other US bases as well.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that's because of course the planes coming back to Lake and Heath later this year, aren't they?
They are.
Yes.
Shit.
I know. Sorry, it's been a bummer, isn't it? Throw that into the mix. What did you? So you weren't exactly politicised by going to Greenham. It sounds like Greenham was part of the politicalisation you were already in.
Yes. Yeah.
How did you? What was your impressions of the visits you made there, and what did you go up to there?
Oh, I loved it. Because of my age, my leanings, I was sort of like, we used to call ourselves hippunks because we were sort of punky hippies. We were like a bit crusty with like shaved heads and mullets and things like that, and big boots and long johns. Really attractive.
Sounds brilliant.
And we used to go to the Turquoise Gate, which is one of the lesser known gates.
Yeah.
And it was hidden away in the woods.
So how did Turquoise come about? Tell me its origins.
I'm sure you know this, each gate had its own history, its own energy rather. So Yellow Gate was like really hardcore. Quite a lot of the separatist feminists were there, and it had quite an angry energy.
Okay.
But very strong, and they took most of the shit because it was the main entrance
of
goods going in and out. And then each different gate had its different energy. So orange and red tended to be more mature women with kids, or just a little bit, you know, a bit more educated maybe, I don't know. And then green was quite hippie, quite cosmic-y, and blue was quite punky. So turquoise just was felt absolutely right for, you know, me and my mates and the people that were sort of young, sort of a little bit punky, a little bit a bit hippie, but, you know, not too strong in either camp. And it was tucked away in the woods, so it was quite nice. It was, you know, there was a gate there because they were all by gates.
Yeah.
But, it was quite... it just felt like it just seems like it was one of the lesser known parts of Greenham Common, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were you there long?
I used to go for sort of a few days at a time. So sometimes there might be a minibus goes down. There used to be two Quaker women from Bristol who had an old truck called the Peace Bus, and that would cart loads of us down there from time to time, and often used to hitchhike down.
Gosh, really?
You could get into some interesting debates with people in cars if they were prepared to pick you up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you ever? Yes. Tell us about that.
Well, mostly people, you know, because we probably looked a certain way, people would pick you up because they were sort of a bit more easy about, you know,
So no one ever picked you up to argue with you necessarily?
No, I did have a friend and she got really angrily out of a car one day about raging about a, you know, a terrible bigot. and it was the time we used to... The police were always stopping you. More when you were going down to London, between Sheffield and London, there was Leicester Forest service station. It had a police station there. Oh. And the police would sort of pick you up. And we just used to give false names just for the hell of it. And I was with a boyfriend at the time and we got stopped and he was Andy Smith and I was Mandy Jones. And they pulled us in and strip searched us for that one.
Oh, but, no.
Yeah.
Just because they assumed you'd made it up,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We were Andy and Mandy. But
you weren't, we presumably, Smith and Jones.
Alias Smith and Jones, yeah. That's quite funny. Yeah. And the occasions when I did get arrested for political activities, the two times that I got arrested... and formally charged, I had given aliases.
Right.
And the two times that I was arrested and not charged were the times that I had given my real surname. So it's just chance, really.
Yeah, just pure fluke.
Yeah.
Did you have particular aliases? Because I know that some of the women had things like Frida People and Stella Artois.
I was Rosa Luxemburg once.
Brilliant.
And, Yeah, that was, I just used to make things up randomly.
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah. Did they bat an eye? Had they heard of who
Absolutely
she was?
Absolutely no idea.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I hope they went and found out. Yeah. So what was the kind of energy at Turquoise then? Was there many, was it not too many women? Was it a smaller gate?
It was a smaller gate, yeah. Mm. And there's a lot of camping and campfires and hanging out in the woods, and then, you know, going out to the whatever gate
needed you
to go and throw yourself down in the road and link arms and wait to be sort of like picked up by several police officers and dropped on the side of the curb, and then you just get up and do it all again.
How did you find the police with you?
Mostly they were a bit bemused. You'd get the occasional ones that, you know, you could just see they were just at the end of their tether with these sort of like infernal women that just why won't you just do as you're told? But I think a lot of them just were quite bemused and didn't really know quite how to deal with all these women just, you know, linking arms and
It wasn't behaviour they'd seen before, I should imagine, at the time either.
Yeah, probably not since the suffragettes had there been anything quite like that, I wouldn't have thought.
No.
Yeah. It's very powerful.
Yeah. Do you think there's been anything like it since?
I don't.
No.
I don't. I think I was from Sheffield, and so there was the miners' strike which came along, so... The police there were much more violent and nasty. I mean, the things that they were doing, like at Orgreave, that was really awful. And they just shipped the Met up from London, and they'd wave £50 notes in front of striking miners and things like that. And it was just really just disgusting.
It's really disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah, and very, very violent and aggressive.
Yeah.
The police weren't, I mean, sometimes they were a bit heavy with how they might throw you in the side of the road, but generally they were not that bad, really. Yeah. Mm. I think it feels like with the changing laws that they're getting much less tolerant now, because people have, you know, with different political groups, with different actions,
we're sort of seeing pre-arrests and people being held indefinitely, aren't we? It's extremely outrageous, I agree.
That man that was arrested for just holding up a piece of paper.
Yeah, people being pre-arrested at the coronation for wearing yellow.
Yeah.
Essentially, they haven't actually done anything yet. Really, really worrying time.
Hmm.
So, do you think that Greenham has had any impact or lasting impression on you, or did it change anything in your how do you feel it when you think about it now, what does it say to you?
I think it really gave me a sense of women's strength. And it's actually why I moved to Bristol. I've only just realised this talking to you now, but I was just got really into being amongst women and the power of women and the women's movement. And I'd been off travelling to Asia for a year and a half, and I hadn't planned to move to Bristol, but I'd come here to just visit a few friends before I was going to go off and do something else. And it was just such a really strong women's scene here, and lots of positive, strong women's things going on. And I just thought, yeah, this is where I want to be. And I moved to Bristol in 1988.
Gosh.
And I've been here ever since.
That's amazing. And that's really defined a massive part of your life, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've only just realised that, thinking, you know, talking to you now, that I'm sure that's all connected, yeah.
Wow. And we've just had a wonderful singing workshop with your amazing daughter.
Mm.
And so you obviously handed on the baton as well, because I was young enough that my mum took me. I'm old enough and I was young enough then.
Yeah.
So I was able to visit with her. But your daughter's much younger, so I'm guessing that she couldn't go with you to Greenham.
She wasn't born
then. No, exactly. No. And yet she's clearly following on in the footsteps of her foremothers. Do you feel that's something how do you feel about that?
I feel incredibly proud and also amazed. You know, sometimes I just look at her and I just think, wow, you're such an amazing person. And not only are you my friend, you're actually my daughter. And it's just, you know, it's just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
It felt like that with you, looking at you while she was leading the workshop, and the way you spoke to each other. She seemed so proud and comfortable with you, and you seemed so proud and comfortable. The love between you was lovely. It was a really
thank you.
Yeah, it shone a light on your relationship. It was a beautiful thing to have in the circle. I think everyone felt relaxed, really relaxed, and part of something because of that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. That's really nice. For her sins, she's coming caving with me in the morning.
Oh my God, really? Caving?
Yeah, I've been caving a few times, and I've always loved it, but I haven't been for probably 30 years. And a couple of years ago, my daughter's asked me what I wanted for my birthday, and I said, I'd like you to go caving with me.
And were they like, anything else? Anything else at all?
Yeah, so Pearls gets the pleasure of doing that with me tomorrow morning.
Amazing. But, how brave of you both.
Oh, I've only done it a few times, but it's a really fantastic experience. I'm quite a tactile person.
Yeah.
And when you go underground, the rocks are all smoothed from where the passage of water, and it's actually really tactile and beautiful. Ooh. It's not all about being in a squashy little space and being in an oppressive underground space. It's actually could be quite open and cavernous.
Ooh. And, there's something a little bit feminine, isn't there, as well? There's a little bit sort of, I suppose, vaginal and womb things maybe in there. A little bit Green Gate, I don't know. But I hadn't thought about that, about the tactileness. That's lovely. Hey, what perfect timing. Pearl join? Pearl, are you happy to join?
Yeah, of course.
Let me just move the mic one. So we're just talking about the workshop you've just done, and the really, obviously you're too young to have gone to the camp, but how clearly you've been suffused with the kind of spirit of Greenham. Were you aware of it growing up? Were you aware of it from your mum?
I knew it as like, you know, when a parent tells you a story of like, oh, Greenham, like I knew it as a name. I knew it was like a protest camp, and I knew that there was a lot of singing there. I definitely have heard little snippets of songs from mum over the years. I've never like super delved into it as like looking. It's really exciting to come and like listen to all the other stories. I've heard about it.
What led you to singing and doing workshops like you've just done for us? Wonderful workshops. What's the is is it is do you think of yourself first as an activist or first as an artist or a bit of both, or how do they blend for you?
I think I think of myself as like a harmony sharer, as a like bringer together of community, and also like a musician and artist alongside that. So kind of feel like that's kind of something that I can bring to activism, or like to as a way to empower people and bring people together. And I kind of got in, like, I've always been around group singing. You know, kind of grew up in my family of noisy people.
Oh yeah, because I play with the Ambling Band as well.
Yes.
Which started in as a protest group in 1981.
Can you tell me a bit more about that? I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it. What was the Ambling Band?
The Ambling Band started in 1981 by, it's ambling as opposed to a marching band.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. Lovely.
Lots of brass.
Yeah. Oh, fab.
And it was started in Bristol by, I think, five musicians that might have met at Bristol Uni Music Department. I'm not quite sure. Valerie Hodges was one of the last remaining members that was in the band when I joined. She's passed over now. But I joined in 1988, and it was still very much a political band at the time. Mm. We would play at demonstrations mainly.
Yeah.
And we still do turn out for demonstrations now, and we play for charities, and we do a lot of busking. We started wearing pink in 1994, and
you never looked back.
Yeah.
Why pink? Would? Just because it's so noticeable?
Yeah, because it's a strong colour, you know, really strong fuchsia pink, and black, or pink and white, or pink and silver.
Oh, lovely.
And, you know, it's... And over years, people said, "Oh, is you doing this for breast cancer or whatever?" So, well, sometimes we do busk for breast cancer, but you know, it's for, you know, it's just for the sort of strong look of it, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've played at Stop the War. The last big demonstration that we went on, I think, was the Ukraine, just after Ukraine was invaded. And yeah, we've gone up to London for the poll tax demonstrations and things like that.
So you've really seen through kind of quite major social justice moments in our modern history, really.
That's what happens when you get old.
That happens when you're awesome and you live an enriched, useful life.
Well, that's well, obviously. Yes. That goes without saying.
And have you played together?
So I don't... Everyone in my family plays a trumpet other than me. but yeah, that's kind of like I was brought up, you know, my first kind of gig was like strapped to my mum while she played the trumpet.
Oh, really?
You know, like had the job of like shaking the bucket for busks and things like that. And like getting some pocket money if we like counted out the pennies. So like kind of always been around that. And I actually write songs, so I kind of do a bit of a different thing.
Mm.
We sing together. We don't really play together very much.
No.
But yeah.
We started singing. We've been to a festival called Tribe of Doris since Pearl and her sister were little, and that's where we would all sing together there, wouldn't we, as a family?
Yeah, I would say that was like the thing that kind of initially inspired me to want to like share song. Because it's like a big gathering. It's not a festival. They call it summer school, and it's all workshops, and it's really multicultural. A friend called Yvette Stalens, who's like a surrogate auntie figure to me.
Oh,
she teaches English folk songs, and she runs similar kind of, you know, that kind of workshops with that idea, like everyone can sing and should have the rights to sing, and making it like an inclusive kind of activity that is like, you know, something that we all used to do together, and it's like being lost from people's lives, like communal singing.
So I would say she
like was a big inspiration.
That's lovely. I wonder if have you had a look at the Greenham songbook that we've got in the room?
I flicked through just before, because I haven't actually looked properly at the exhibition yet. That's my next my next move. But yeah, I was flicking through it before.
I bet you find some overlaps or songs that you don't know a different name or different words, but you go, oh, that's what that is.
Yeah, because kind of finding the origins of where they start.
I think it's the, again, women pass on oral histories, and singing is an oral history, isn't it? As much, you know, and folk songs are an oral way of passing on experience and opinion, I guess.
Yeah, and storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was thinking about you. I was saying to Amanda what a really strong relationship and connection there was between you, and what a sort of enjoyable and you know what an honour it was to be around that, and I think it really influenced the circle and the singing and made people feel like they were in something quite special. So it was really lovely, and I know that mother daughter from my own mother daughter relationship, I know they're not always straightforward and they can be complicated, and families have every right to fall out and challenge each other. But do you feel there is something, obviously there's so much about mothers and daughters that is about Greenham, do you feel like part of, how do you feel your relationship influences and your mum, perhaps your mum's experiences as well, have influenced your life and perhaps influenced you both? What do you think about your...
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, when I talk about my mum, I feel very proud to have, like, come from, you know, such, like, strength and, like, you know, noisiness.
Excellent.
And, yeah, I definitely, like... feel connected, and I think it's really nice to have things like this that like make me realize and acknowledge like the importance of those events, and you know, and for her to realize and acknowledge them as well, because it's like, you know, you're 1920 when you went, like it it's nice that there's like people like you putting on these events and like kind of sharing like what it was like, and also just having, I think, any form of protest is like a form of hope, which is really fragile, and to keep having conversations about how we can like create community and hold each other in a way that is like connecting is really important. So yeah, I guess I feel connected through that, and I'm exploring more and more through sharing song as my way in to activism and into like, you know, what can I use this to support. I've been the last year I led some workshops at the Land Workers Alliance, who are all kind of about land-based justice, and that's been like really eye-opening. Yeah, I guess, through my mum, feel connected, and...
Sounds like it's almost like you're quite grounded to start, rather than having to invent the wheel, which is why I sort of feel like this is so wrong. It's a cultural robbery for us not to share these our lives with each other, because you don't get a chance to stand on the shoulders of the giants otherwise, and we don't get a chance to interrelate what we're doing and make the choices we want to make next. It just feels very... doesn't feel... linear to me. It feels absolutely current for that exchange to be, like you say, it's fragile and we have to nourish it, but it's absolutely how we change things, isn't it, and how we bring people into a position where they feel like all is not hopeless.
Yeah, and I think it's quite like a lot of people's mindsets, it's like becoming more and more individualistic, like this is my life and like this is my work and this is like... And I think having more spaces where you can look out and like see like the people around you and the people before you, and I'm really lucky to like have a role model who is you. Because it's cool, like, you know, it makes things feel, you know, possible, and you know, it's also makes things feel like, fuck, there's so much stuff we're still having to like fight against, but you know, there is things that come from this,
And successes that have been had as well. You know,
yeah.
One of the great things about Greenham is it's a real success story. You know, it's a massive piece of feminist LGBT women's social, all those histories, they're all there. And it was a bloodless, nearly bloodless coup. I know women were hurt and some women more than hurt, but in the whole, if you look at any other land occupation in history and social history, it ends with a horrendous bloodbath, you know, of everyone just being wiped out by the king's men or whatever. And Graham isn't like, and it influences social policy, you know, it gets the common back for the people. It's really important that women, that young, all people know that was done.
Hear positive stories.
That it's worth bothering.
On the exhibition.
Well, thank you for giving me something to exhibit. A little bit redundant without you, I've got to say, Amanda. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you'd like to say? Because that does feel like a very nice place to knowing that you've also got some important caving to do tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, my God. Very impressed. Anything that you would like to, knowing that if someone's listening to this, what you'd like them to.
I guess I'm just like, I don't know, it feels like it's going to open up conversations between us about, you know, more specific, like delving into that history. And, you know, I'm interested to hear more stories now and like.
Great.
To kind of keep learning, and that I'm so excited to look in that songbook and see what songs I can maybe like take forward and share further. Like, it feels just like. A really lovely opportunity to
relax.
So thank you, that's all.
That's all for me. Thank you. Amanda, anything you
want to
say?
I think you know, I feel like one of those women that should have a placard that say, I can't believe I'm still fighting the same old shit. And in some ways it's really good to be reminded and to remember Greenham and how strong it was. I think one of the things now is that with social media and there's just so many things there's so many injustices. You know, I cannot believe that it's become okay to have a food bank in every supermarket. I just find that absolutely outrageous. And it feels that now there's so many things that are injustices. It's almost paralyzing. And one of the things about Greenham is because it was a single issue, women could put their energy into that one issue, and whereas now I feel, if anything, slightly overwhelmed by the number of things that there are. And you know, I can do my own little bit in my own little way, but in terms of single issues, I find that it's harder now because there's so many issues, and I don't know whether that's just how I feel or whether lots of people feel like
I think a lot of people do feel like that, and I think that it is quite a conscious decision to bombard us with all the things that are wrong but without telling us that how they connect. So it just feels like there's no point. Whereas actually, when you start to have conversations like these, you realize how it all marries up, and you go, so if we weren't doing that, that wouldn't happen, and then we wouldn't need this. Okay, so actually it brings it back to the web and the community and the changes that you can make actually having meaning and impact, I think, because actually all the things you don't like are kind of connected too. So if they're connected, we can change the connections, can't we?
We all need to collectively stand up and say no, don't we?
Yeah. And make some good suggestions of what we'd like instead.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much, both of you.